Welcome to a new edition of the Neon Jazz Interview Series with Brooklyn-based jazz saxophonist and composer Remy LaBeouf. He talked to us about his latest 2022 CD, Architecture of Storms. It is his second large ensemble album. The first one was Assembly of Shadows, and it received two Grammy nominations back in 2019. This Grammy-nominated musician grew up in Santa Cruz, California, with an identical twin. His music is rooted in the jazz tradition and overlaps into the contemporary classical realm, drawing on various influences from Aaron Copland to Charles Mingus. Enjoy his story.
Hey, thanks for taking a minute out for the show, man. I appreciate it.
Oh, of course.
First and foremost, your newest CD, Architecture of Storms, which almost sounds like kind of a breaking down our lives since March of 2020. Talk to me a little bit about what it means to release this now that, you know, we're kind of back in this whole COVID situation of no live music and just kind of what we've been living for a year and a half now.
I'm just glad that I got it out before Omicron hit in earnest, and that we were able to have a CD release show in New York. It was so magical, and I'm just, no one can take that away from me now. But
absolutely,
I'd say I think that this was a big year for a lot of artists in terms of their conceptual journeys. It was an opportunity to, you know, focus on composition and recording and things of that nature, since touring was a little bit harder to manage these last couple of years.
We're closer to the end of this than we are a while back. I mean, we can see some spokes of light. You had the show. People had some shows several months ago. So hopefully things, as we move forward, open up. So is there any kind of, you know, spring renewal hope for you to get this out and really kind of hit the road with it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm going to be on tour in Canada in March and kind of the, you know, northeast of the U.S. as well. And that, none of that's been canceled yet. So I think that's still going to happen. Yeah, we've got some shows that got, you know, postponed and recording sessions and stuff, but they're all going to happen. They're just going to happen like in the fall of this year or like later, early summer, stuff like that.
So over this COVID time of, you know, kind of quarantine and self-introspection, we all had the chance to kind of look within. And what did you learn about yourself over this time that maybe you didn't realize before that will make you stronger as you get back out on the road in March and hopefully in this year that opens up more and more?
I think I got better at spending time by myself. I have moments of being extroverted and introverted, but I think that I was able to really enjoy my solitude in a way that I feel very fortunate to have had that experience. You know, not everyone felt creative, you know, when they were, you know, hoarding toilet paper. But I was very fortunate to, you know, feel like I could explore, you know, new sides of myself. I think I just got better at being alone. You know, I've gotten, you know, I've been able to enjoy my own company. And that was a lesson that I learned, you know, these last 2 years, and I'll take that forward.
So before we stray away from the new album, what are you hoping the listener gets from this experience? Those that download and buy it, what do you want them to get from it?
Oh, I wanted to take them on an emotional journey. I mean, I think that I put out two jazz orchestra records in these last couple of years, both right before big pandemic hits. But Assembly of Shadows and Architecture of Storms, and they're both the same initials, same syllables. They're meant to be kind of a pair. First one, I was really kind of establishing my identity as a jazz orchestra composer with a lot of kind of orchestral influence and very kind of modern sensibility that I hope is unique to myself. And the second record, I got to really explore more. I got to explore more power and, energy with the size of the ensemble, but also like more intimacy and vulnerability. So I hope it'll take the listener on an emotional journey. It's very melody driven, very colorful, very cinematic. I hope it can just be the soundtrack to listeners' lives, you know, when they're enjoying it.
So how did this jazz journey begin for you? We all have that flashpoint, that opening. Talk to me a little bit about where you were born and raised and how jazz became the lineage that followed you to today.
I'm from Santa Cruz, California, and I grew up playing music with my identical twin brother, Pascal. He played piano and I played saxophone. We had some, you know, great supportive parents and a great community. We learned some jazz standards from our sister's middle school band teacher, and we started just playing those at a coffee shop while we were waiting to get picked up, and where there was a piano, and we got a lot of attention for it. And I think we were like 12. We loved getting attention for things.
Our parents took notice of this, and we ended up playing
playing for tips at a local farmer's market every Saturday before dance lesson. We'd get free oysters playing next to the oyster stand, something we loved, and we would you know, get a lot of experience playing a lot of, like, classic songs from the Ellington Strayhorn songbook, for example, and other kind of jazz standards. And we just kept adding to this collection, and we got more serious about it. But I think from a very early age, we were comfortable performing. As that developed, we got more ambitious about it, and we began composing as well. And we eventually went to Manhattan School of Music in New York, and we launched our careers in New York and formed a band called LaBook Brothers, put out about 4 albums with that band. We really tried to stretch, you know, the boundaries of, you know, what we could do as jazz musicians, you know, in an accessible way. But, like, we were very interested in being at the forefront of what jazz was, you know, during this time. One point along this path, I got a commission from a university in Japan to write for their big band. And I'd written a little bit of, you know, big band jazz orchestra, kind of similar, you know, same thing, but different approaches, I guess you could say. I took the commission, and I really enjoyed writing for them. And I'd written before for big band, but I never kind of thought as something that I wanted to, you know, make my you know, identity. I just enjoyed myself so much, and I wanted to do more of it. And so I did. And now I've got 2 albums out, and things have been so much fun.
Well, you know, you obviously performed at an early age, but what was the first live jazz show that you saw that really made you think, wow, I want to do that, I love what they're doing?
I can't remember what the very first one was. I mean, I'm sure I went to some, like, jazz festivals, you know, like high school jazz festivals, and saw some of my peers playing and stuff like that. But I do remember seeing Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra play in my hometown. I remember loving
The Mooch.
I'm like, yeah. I'm losing it over here. The Mooch by, you know, Duke Ellington, and I just loved the sound of it, you know. And I got the album, and I listened to that, and later I went to lots of shows at the Columba Jazz Center, which is a club in my hometown, Santa Cruz. Got to see Chris Potter, Miguel Zanon, Joey DeFrancesco, just like everybody who'd come through town. I would be there in the front row, just like drooling over the music.
As we look at your life, you know, migrating into college and all of that, was it kind of a culture shock for you to go from California to New York? And was that something you'd always kind of eyeballed as a future for you?
I think a lot of people had told me that if I wanted to pursue jazz, I should move to New York. And I ended up going to the college that I wanted to go to, partially because it was in New York. It's not necessarily something I had eyeballed all my life, because I didn't really know that I wanted to pursue jazz until I was maybe 15 or so. Yeah, I think it was certainly a culture shock, but not necessarily more of a culture shock than, you know, going to college and living away from your parents would be for anyone. I mean, everything is new at that age. And so you kind of take newness in stride when you're 18, you know. I got to, you know, grow up and gain perspective in the world. And New York was a great place to do it. I was surrounded by, you know, very inspiring people, and I was lucky.
So speaking of inspiration, who in the world of jazz has inspired you the most? Who have you either tried to emulate or listen to that made you kind of tick and get to where you're at?
I think there are different people at different times in my lives. My lives, plural, no. I only have one life. yeah, I think in terms of, I think the person who really sparked my interest the most in the very beginning was Charles Mingus. I listened to Mingus Aum for about a year straight, every night. I borrowed the CD from my older sister, and I just couldn't get enough of it. And I went to sleep listening to that album because I wanted to internalize everything. And I transcribed Booker Irvin's solos. He was my favorite player when I was like 12, 13. And, you know, later I, you know, there are so many people that I'm inspired by now. I don't really know where to begin. I mean, I love Joshua Redman as a saxophonist, Chris Potter, huge influence, Cannibal Adderley, Will Vinson and Ben Van Gelder are some more modern players, and Mark Turner. As a composer, I still to this day just love Charles Mingus. I love Wayne Shorter's writing for large and small ensembles. Maria Schneider is, of course, somebody who I love for jazz orchestra. Danilo Perez, I think, is an incredible composer. John Patitucci, Brian Blade, you know, Kirk Rosenwinkel, so many people to be inspired by. I just list all day. The listeners would fall asleep while I just list names.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are so many in your life. You've talked about getting, you know, honors to write music and Grammy nominations and all of those things. What award surprised you the most? What accolade did you get that really kind of threw you for a loop? You didn't expect it.
The two Grammy nominations last year. Didn't expect that at all. Total joy. Especially like, you know, in the midst of all the depressing pandemic, you know, stuff, it was nice to get that little piece of cake.
Right on. What is it that you like the best about being a professional musician? You know, every day you get to start out and you have the opportunity to create music. What is it that you like the best about this whole process?
I think the depth of my relationships with other people, whether they're my bandmates who I've known for years or complete strangers. I mean, when you play music with somebody, it's a kind of intimacy. And it can be a kind of intimacy depending on the approach that you take. But like, I really find a lot of fulfillment in like getting to know people, having like conversations that connect us. Like I feel like I'm like really connected to a person in a deep way, and we are having like a special moment together. It's those like special moments. And I think that you can have that in a number of ways. You know, you can have that with conversations. You can have that, you know, with relationships with people. You can have that playing basketball with somebody and you like really click, you know, like, I don't know. But like, for me, I think musically, like it's really special to know somebody that intimately or to, you know, I remember going to play in China once and, you know, 10 years ago or so. And like, I couldn't communicate with anybody in terms of my language, you know, skills. I don't speak Chinese, you know, but like once we started playing music together, you know, I really got to know these people, and it's just nice to be able to have that universal language that, you know, can connect us.
Is there anybody out there right now that's playing in the world of jazz that you would like to see live that you haven't? Anybody on your radar?
Ooh, that's a good question. I want to see Wayne Shorter's new opera. I haven't seen that, but as far as like a single person, a player, that's a tough one because there are a lot of people that there are a lot of people, but I seek out opportunities to hear those people.
If you could get into a time machine and go back in time and see anyone, one jazz musician, who are you going to see? Where are you going to go?
Okay. So if we're limiting it to jazz, in particular, man, it would probably have to be, Duke Ellington or Charles Mingus, you know, I mean, I'd probably want to hear Charles Mingus in the late 50s. I think that would be a pretty incredible time to see him, or maybe in the 70s from the Let My Children Hear the Music album. If that was ever performed live, I mean, that would be incredible. I think that's off the top of my head.
So everyone has a dream or an idea of who they think you are, or a perception, I should say, but you're the one that's living your life. You have a perception of yourself. Who do you think you are?
Well, you know, I think I've thought a lot more about identity than most people being an identical twin. Because a lot of people's idea of who I am doesn't always represent who I am as an individual. It might represent who we are, me and my brother, or they might think his actions are my actions and vice versa. So it's a very interesting question. Who do I think I am? It's an impossible question to answer. I mean, I think that when if you think about identity, it's like almost a set of limits. And so I think that I am constantly changing, and I would like to be constantly changing. I think once I start to over-define myself, I set limits for myself, and I'm bound by those limits. Right now, I think that I'm in terms of music, like I'm very very emotion driven, and I think I kind of like to paint with emotion.
I like that answer, Remy. Thank you for taking a minute out for Neon Jazz. Good luck with the album, the return to the stage, and happy 2022.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be on the show.
Thanks for listening and tuning in to another Neon Jazz interview, where we give you a bit of insight into the finest players in California, New York, Kansas City, and spots all over the world, giving fans all that jazz. And thanks to Remy for his time, music, and story. If you want to hear more interviews, go to Famous Interviews with Joe Domino in the iTunes Store. Visit NeonJazz at YouTube.com. And for everything Neon Jazz all the time, go to the NeonJazz.blogspot.com. Until next time, enjoy the jazz, my friends.
Neon Jazz.